Absolute pleasure to be here. Even if I'm watching you and watching myself on the screen, I've not had that experience before. So yeah, it's interesting. Thank you, Paul, for inviting me. You guys are going to be a really tough act to follow. I really enjoyed listening to the five words. I had a go. What I wrote was total drivel, but I am pleased to report that at least hope and therapy are in the poems that I'm going to read. And thank you, Dara. Your poem's absolutely magnificent. So, yeah, I hope I could not be too much of a letdown, and also stay awake. This is way past my bedtime. yeah, this is yeah me rocking out on a Monday night. So yeah, I'm going to start with a poem about a horse. It's called This Horse. There's this horse that can't eat apples. It's not that the horse doesn't like apples or that its castle of teeth can't crush them, but that its leather satchel tongue can't collect the bits, or that its upturned welly of a throat can't tramp down the chunks. It's that one day, as it drew up an apple of no distinction, the horse had a thought. What if I choke on this? And the more the horse tried to swat the thought away, the more the apple grew, and the more the thought grew, until the horse felt it had Jupiter and all its moons in its mouth, and it couldn't breathe, and it was gagging. And its owner tried to reason with it, but the horse wouldn't be told. And over the course of a year, the horse visited the vet every Wednesday at 12, and the vet advised the horse to try an exercise where the horse had to choose a small globe from a bagged assortment and hold each one in its mouth in a series of graded steps. A robin's egg for 1 minute, a beetroot for two, cannonball for three. And the horse had to commit to the process and tolerate the discomfort, and by all means note down its thoughts and feelings, but not respond to them. And none of this worked. And the only thing for the horse to do was to eat oats and practice radical acceptance of apples as something eaten by other horses in another place and time, as if all the apples in the world were locked behind glass cabinets in a museum with all the other things the horse's thoughts had forced it to give up. Cool pools, hugs of mud, low hedged fields. Oh, this poor horse, caught and stuck in what if thinking. And yet our brains are incredible what if machines. And this can have positive outcomes, you know, if people thinking, what if people didn't think, what if we wouldn't have Shakespeare, suspension bridges, moon landings, hubs, Zoom readings, and so on and so forth. And yet there's also a flip side to what if thinking. And I have an epigraph on this in the front of my collection, The Thought, which I'm reading from tonight, from Edgar Allan Poe. Where it comes from an essay he wrote called The Imp of the Perverse. And he describes this feeling, this overwhelming feeling that he gets when standing on a precipice. So he's at the kind of, I think it's the top of a cliff or something like that. And he suddenly has this horrific thought, what if I was to jump? And who hasn't had that kind of what if thought when confronted with such a possibility and just inwardly then shuddered? So this book, The Thoughts, explores unwanted intrusive thoughts. It's part of obsessive compulsive disorder. But I also hope that this book reaches across our common humanity. OCD is, after all, a disorder that arises out of a universality of our brain's ability to think up what-if scenarios. So in my next poem, I kind of want to go back to the end of the horse poem, back into the mud, into a poem called Tainted Ode. Oh, dirt, what is this madness? How'd you get me going so? I know you've kissed the necks of bins, a curb's lips, the skins of bus seats. My darling dirty dirt, I know you've kissed a pug's ass. I think about you all the time, my love. I wait for you every night, put on clean sheets, wipe down the soles of my slippers, wash my hands before brushing my teeth, all because of you. I wonder, what is dirt doing right now? At parties, I glimpse you in the floor of my glass. In a beard, in a broken arrow of saliva, but I know in my head it's not really you, that you have better things to do, like sleep your way around town. I love you so much, I can't eat anything that comes out of the ground. Throw away tasty, in-date food at the thought of you. People say one day I'll meet the dirt of my dreams, and then I'll have something real to worry about. Oh, dirt, no one can know about us. Meet me one lunchtime, but no texting. I want no trace of you. Dirt, what does it take to make you come? Does your face look like when you do? Dirt, I hate it when you don't get back to me. Don't tell me where you are. Dirt, I'm yours. Come, sweep me off my filthy slippers. That poem, Tainted Ode, touches into common conceptions of OCD about being about cleanliness. The other popular idea being that it's about tidiness. And while there is such thing as contamination OCD and symmetry OCD, it's vastly important to recognize that such themes cause the sufferer to, well, actually suffer, of course. There's no joy in any of this. It's a disorder. And I had thought that that was the extent of OCD too, until the day my brain literally felt like it had broken through sheer terror of a what if thought that was nothing to do with dirt or germs or symmetry. Unfortunately for my wife, my brain broke on the last day of our honeymoon. We're still together many years later, but we had got nicely soggled on our honeymoon. We were on a wine tour in the south of France in Avignon, and we thought we'd got time for one last cheeky little jaunt before we have to go home. And there in the town square in Avignon, I don't know if anyone's been, but there was one of these little kind of trains that you can get on, and they kind of whirl you around the old quarter. I think it was called the train touristique or something like that. And this is kind of the backstory to my next poem, which is called The Day My Brain Broke. The day my brain broke was sunny. Was warm in the south of France, warm with wine tour, was we're on honeymoon, was sunny, was changeable, warm in the ears, far from home, sunny between lightning, was warm, was hot, brought to boil in a bistro, sunny for everyone else on that tourist train, was suddenly hot, torture chamber on wine tour, in hot water. Suddenly, the main character, boiling in jail, was changed into a murderer. Lightning strike, chamber bolt, locked in a film, was sunny, was warm in the south of France, telling my lover things had gone weird, was hot honeymoon stuck on Le Petit Train, warm sunny wine on the old town loop, was stuck in a loop, stuck south of France, was sudden, was warm, was sunny, was hot. I've read numerous accounts of OCD sufferers, kind of, or people living with OCD rather, feeling the same, that There is an occasion where OCD gets really bad. A person has a single terrifying thought which suddenly descends as if from nowhere, and yuck, it sticks and upends their world because it's so unwanted. It's ego dystonic, entirely out of whack with their values and who they are. And part of the brain knows it. I can't think of a better summary for my experience of OCD as that offered by a psychologist called Jonathan Grayson, who says, quote, "It's as if you have simultaneously lost your mind and at the same time are so sane that you are witness to the loss." So this idea of OCD being, I read other people talk about it being a kind of sane person's illness. I mean, I don't know, we could unpick that many ways, but certainly that kind of paradox and that balance of irrationality and rationality has been part of my own experience. So this is a book about unwanted, intrusive thoughts, but also the attempt to get relief from them through compulsions. The next poem I'm going to read is an attempt to kind of bring the idea of the compulsion into the form of the poem itself. Here we go. It's just to show you what it looks like. Then if that's showing up brilliantly or not, but you can see hopefully checks. Yeah, it looks like a checkerboard. It's called, innovatively, Poem on Checks. Check your inbox. Check you haven't sent porn. Check where they've got to. Check you haven't killed them. Check you heard correctly. Check you can't be sacked. Check the bathroom's free. Check it's your blood on the tampon. Check it's them, not you. Check it's not schizophrenia. Check if it'll be sunny. Check you can't go blind. Check your bank balance. Check they cannot sue you. Check the pH levels. Check you haven't drunk the bleach. Check there's enough paper. Check your letter isn't sexy. Check the joint is properly cooked. Check it isn't drugs. Check your tax return before filing. Check you've not committed fraud. Check what time we're eating. Check your pans for poison. Check your breasts monthly. Check it's not indecent exposure. Check your chin for toothpaste. Check you haven't slashed your throat. Check the news online. Check you've not brought down the government. Check no one saw your pin. Check they can't pin it on you. Check directions for use. Check it can't get in your bloodstream. Check with the doctor if symptoms persist. Check it's not meningitis. Check there's a seat spare. Check it can't get up your arse. Done? Check it all again. It was a really telling phrase, Dara, that you talked about. That you were talking about going through hell and just kind of, really the kind of awfulness of mental illness. And when my OCD got really bad, I fell into a really deep depression alongside it. Looking back, not surprising, given the years and years of horrible thoughts and exhausting rituals to get relief from them, it just takes a toll. And this next poem arises out of that. It's called Today You Went to Lunch with a Cave. Today you went to lunch with a cave. It wasn't the first time, so your eyes didn't widen when it arrived, trying the door first frontwards, then side on, like an overgrown shore crab. The waiter took its shabby medieval cart as the cave sloped into its seat, spreading its grey slabs around like dusty skirts. The table next to you stared deep into the cave's mouth. It performed a polite smile of rock and lichen, debris breaking at the corners like torn bread. You asked the cave how it was, talked about the weather, what a nightmare the bus was. But there was no echo, and you wondered if you'd got the right cave. You lobbed in more words, some sharp as flint, others smooth as shale, and you heard in the distance contact with water, the sound of weighted objects plummeting, and you knew that this was your cave, all right. The cave you drifted into one spring day on a Cornish beach and buried secrets in disturbed sands. The cave which, over the years, gave you shelter, adventure, whose fissures grew like cracking ice, whose darkness was washed darker by restless tides, until there were days like these where the cave came to you and you couldn't tell whether it was finally still or just a wave away from collapse. I'm now moving into hope. So many people have been there in my recovery journey, and certainly in the spirit of first fortnight, and us being here together tonight and talking about mental health and writing poetry in kind of evocation of mental health experiences and awareness. I just want to read a poem in that vein, which kind of gives thanks to the idea of somebody walking beside you. Okay. It's called After Being Unable to Tell the Samaritans. It's very short. After being unable to tell the Samaritans, I tell you how the thoughts have changed, how they can now come out of walls, how they work this gaffer tape, this rope, how there's no ransom note, no recording, no concrete floor, and no single light bulb, how it's happening right here. How I'm drinking this pint with a knife to my throat. How I just can't say, but you know. We escape the pub to snowfall, talk, leave two sets of tracks on the path. I'm going to finish with the last poem in the collection. Firstly, actually, just look back at the cover design. I'm not trying to flog the book, but it's relevant to what I'm going to say. But basically, when we were talking about covers for this collection, The Thoughts, I was very definite. Oh, I want a, one of those kind of neuroscientific images of the brain showing the bits that light up where, OCD glitches tend to be. We ruled that idea out when the production manager found this wonderful piece of art, which shows an entire head and pathways through the head down to the neck and so on. And I thought this shift in emphasis to a sense of wholeness rather than the trouble centres, as it were, I just thought that was really kind of on the money for what I was trying to do with the book, which is to show the wholeness of a person who lives and loves as well as obsesses and compulses. So I'm going to close with the poem that is also the book's close. And it's a poem which rolls up the themes of living and loving and obsessing and compulsing into a sonnet. So the book is, I guess, in a way, a kind of love story, not just to other people, but in a way to kind of that resilient self that I kind of was forced to find through my journey of accepting oneself and all the thoughts that show up but don't define the person. And the poem is based upon a tool that is used widely in cognitive behavioral therapy, CBT, where a person is invited to Try not to think of a white bear, or try not to think of a pink elephant. And the results to this little task are supposed to be universal. The very attempt to suppress thoughts of white bears or pink elephants means that not only do we think of them, we actually think of them more. And it was the psychologist Daniel Wegener who discovered this kind of process of thought suppression makes thoughts a lot worse. And if you have a spare minute or two later, you can try it yourselves. You set off a timer for a minute, try not to think of a white bear or pink elephant, and every time you do, you kind of notate a tally. So that's something else to kind of leave you with, but I'm just going to read a poem which is titled White Bears and Pink Elephants. A poem which is about welcoming thoughts instead of pushing them away. Ends on a note of hope. White bears and pink elephants. Please think of them. They've had a lifetime of discouragement. Throw away all coconut ice, clear shelves of marshmallow mix. Do it properly. Think white equals bear, pink equals elephant. Disregard Cadillacs, white leather seats, spurn pink ladies, platinum wigs. Think powder puff endings to clinical psychologists and theoretical cages which incarcerate white bears and pink elephants with all the pies in the sky, their 4 and 20 blackbirds ready to surprise week one of group therapy. Think up puffs of pink and white party smoke. Focus the mind. Think elephant equals pink, bear equals white. Kiss 'em, hug 'em, love bomb the hell out of 'em. Truly, madly bring 'em into the room. Roar and trumpet those bountiful, beautiful beasts into being. Thank you.